is it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to Monday Afternoon. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline Studio as we get started on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's days like today's, right, when you look ahead and planning your summer vacation. Not planning one? 39 million Americans say they cannot afford or will not go on a summer vacation this year. We'll talk to Ted Rossman from bankrate.com. He's a credit card analyst, about maybe some things you can do to change that. It's not too late to figure out a vacation. Good for you if you can afford it. Right now in the studio, Jim Dahlke is here. There's a new app that I'm kind of excited about. It's called Median. And because, you know, when you're doing your taxes or you're doing your savings plans or things like that, you kind of wonder how you fit in when it comes to other people in your income bracket or in your age bracket, things like that. This new app, Median, is maybe designed to help that. Jim Dahlke here from Chicago Inno. Welcome back, Jim.
Hey, Steve. Happy Monday.
Happy-ish Monday.
Yeah.
It's okay. Tell me about this Median, because I think this could be a really cool thing. I don't want to have to do all the savings plan. I just want to compare.
So, exactly. So, Median, spelled M-E-D-E-A-N, typical Chicago startup spelling, right? So, they are a financial planning and savings app, not so unlike kind of typical apps like Mint and Acorns and other kind of financial apps like them. But they have one very distinct differentiator, and is that they show you what your spending is like to people who are comparable to you. So they are able to use your data, to look at your data, and kind of compare you to people who are your age and your location and your gender, and see kind of how you're spending when it comes to dining out or spending on your rent, for example.
Is that something that interests you? Because that really interests me. I'm wondering, like, well, am I being too cheap? Am I spending more than typical, or am I cheating myself out of some fun I should be having, things like that?
I am definitely interested in it. And I think one thing is, like, maybe the more oddball categories, you know, like dining out would be one, but like, boy, am I like going to the movies way too much? You know, there is like an interesting kind of peer pressure element to this, in that like you're kind of knowing what other people who are in your kind of age range and demographic are sort of spending.
So the benefit is if you are going to the movies too much, I mean, it sort of shows that something's a little out of whack.
Right.
I mean, it might be worth it to you to do that, but it shows that what you're spending isn't sort of typical.
Exactly. And so if you're kind of way to the one end of the spectrum on that, this app kind of helps you like bring it back to the equilibrium a little bit and kind of realize like, hey, wait, maybe I am like, maybe a movie every other day is a little too much.
Maybe that $15,000 I spent on my granddaughter last year was a little out of whack.
Yeah.
Where do they get their numbers? Do you know?
Right. So what they do is, they, like most of these financial savings apps, they connect to your bank account. So they're able to like access how much you're spending on a day-to-day basis. And then they're, sharing sort of anonymous data. So it's not your specific personal data that's being shared with customer to customer, but they're able to kind of look at their user base across the board.
Are they making money yet, or have they figured out how to make money on this?
So that's a great question. So right now, that's just user-generated kind of at this point. So just trying to getting as many users as possible. So haven't have a clear revenue plan yet, but you'd imagine that they can offer lots of different kind of financial packages to kind of boost revenue. But right now, just kind of growing with the user base.
All right, and it's up and running, right?
That's right. Yeah, they're alive and running right now, saying they're adding, I think, about got about 1,000 active users at the moment, adding like hundreds a day.
So it's called Median, no I's, two E's in that, M-E-D-E-A-N.
That's
okay,
right.
I'm all about travel, and there's another one called Trip Scout, which I have to check out. I didn't know about it until I read it in Chicago Inno.
Yeah, Trip Scout's a really interesting one, and I like it for a few reasons. So one, they are a travel app that they say is designed to be used every day. Now, what does it mean to have a travel app every day? But when you think about people who are real travel junkies, and whether it's, you know, you're planning an upcoming trip, you know, when I was going to Las Vegas with my wife for the first time, I couldn't get enough of just news about Las Vegas.
Right.
I wanted to know where to go, and I wanted to do, like, Google every piece of information possible on this. And Trip Scout is really doing that for you. They're kind of aggregating all the best content from top publishers, whether it's Condé Nast or the New York Times or Eater. Everything that you need to know about your upcoming trip is all kind of in one place.
So it's like an online travel section.
Exactly.
Right.
And they're kind of a destination for just travel content generally. So it's videos, articles, Instagram influencers, basically anything that you want to know about an upcoming trip you have, or just travel in general, they're going to have this information for you.
Didn't I read somewhere that they said something like they want to be the YouTube of the travel industry?
Yeah, basically what they want to do is be a an entertainment destination. So kind of like the way you think about Netflix or Hulu, that's kind of the way they
that's
see themselves.
Hulu, yeah.
Right. So it's not so much that they're built based on, hey, we want to help you book a flight. They want really just to immerse you with travel content.
Because, you know, if I'm booking a flight or trying to create a trip or finding sites to see, and you end up on that particular site's website, that doesn't really help you that much.
Right. And actually, neither does Google. Google will give you what you need, but boy, do you have to spend a ton of right. time going down the rabbit hole to try to find all this information. What they're able to do is really kind of provide you the best content around your upcoming trip or about just a city in general. And kind of another piece that I really love about this is that, you know, they're not generating revenue right now, but just last week they raised $2 million from Chicago venture capitalists. What that says to me is that this app, A, is onto something, and B, that Chicago's investors are really warming up to consumer apps, because, man, a few years ago, I'm not sure that a non-revenue generating travel app in Chicago could have raised $2 million.
We've talked about that, right? Because this has the reputation of being a B2B city, not a B2C.
That's right.
So that's funny. I smiled when you said they're not bringing home revenue right now. It's like, Dad, she's not really making any money right now, but really, there's a great promise here.
That's the way that, you know, Chicago's kind of early seed investors have always operated, right? Like, where's the revenue? Where's the revenue? Where's the revenue? And that's why this travel app that currently doesn't generate revenue was so interesting to me, is because, wow, they were able to get $2 million from a handful of very well-known VCs around town to kind of invest in this. So down the road, they are going to be able to do things like help you actually book flights and book travel activities. So they have a revenue plan down the road.
And they don't have that now.
Not right now.
They do have, though, where you can sort of create your itinerary or click on things you want to save,
right? They've built a really impressive piece of technology where you can go into the article. The New York Times is, you know, 36 hours in Chicago, and they list all the places. And you can, within that article, bookmark different bars and different restaurants and different tourist attractions and kind of set your itinerary if you're traveling to Chicago.
Okay, so there's that. And maybe if you want to drive around town when you get here, there's a company called Prestige Exotics, which doesn't sound like a car rental company to me. I'm not sure what's going on there, but tell me about this.
So Prestige Exotics, brand new startup here in Chicago, and what they're trying to do is help rent you your dream car. So they have access to some super, super high-end luxury vehicles that they will rent you kind of on a daily basis. So these are up to over $1,000 a day for some extremely high-end Lamborghinis and Mercedes G-Wagon.
So I'm thinking, is this like a wedding car?
So right now, they say that they are almost booked out of the inventory with prom. So prom has been a big one. Right. So weddings to me seems like the kind of the sweet spot in terms of, you know, transportation for the wedding party, or maybe the bride and groom throughout the day need to kind of have a fancy vehicle.
It's interesting, though. So if it's proms, generally they're hiring limo drivers. These don't come with drivers, right?
Right. So I would imagine that a very excited dad of a prom couple would be happy to kind of drive some kids around.
So where else would you take this? Maybe to your 10-year reunion if you haven't landed a real job.
That's a good one. 10-year reunion. Yeah, anything kind of special occasion-y is sort of the market they're looking
for. Maybe your ex-wife's funeral, something like that.
Yeah, rolling up looking good.
Are they doing well? Are they up to speed and running and everything?
So just getting off the ground right now. So they have about 20 vehicles kind of in their lot. And so, you know, to be determined on kind of how successful they'll be down the road. But hey, if you're looking for, if you've got an extra $1,000 to spend and you want to have a swanky ride, it's not a bad option.
Prestige Exotics, it's called. Okay, Jim Dalkey is here from Chicago Inno. When it comes to, we're talking about venture capital raising money and things like that, the opposite or the alternative is bootstrapping, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is more likely in Chicago, bootstrapping or venture capital?
Well, venture capital is the more likely route for a lot of the businesses we're seeing.
We were talking about bootstrapping, and so the alternative is to find some fat cat to give you money to run your business. So the first reaction might be, well, bootstrappers are people who couldn't lure in the money, the venture capitalists. That's not necessarily the case.
That's right. So bootstrapping is really the alternative to venture capital. And, you know, the way that startups are covered in the media and certainly covered at Chicago, you know, we talk about venture capital all the time. There's a reason of that, right? One is a validation, at least by the people who are writing checks, right? Like this startup has potential. Two, it's one of the most transparent metrics of financial metrics that we can see. You know, not every private business is going to open up their books and let us see the revenue. So that's why we cover venture capital, but it's not the only method to growing your business.
Well, it shows a little momentum, right?
It does.
And like we were just talking about the other ones who are investing in Trip Scout or things like that, that there must be people looking at it that they believe in it.
Exactly. But we're kind of seeing, I mean, this isn't exactly a new phenomenon, but there is a wave kind of happening within the startup community right now that among founders to kind of buck the trend of venture capital, entrepreneurs kind of wanting to go at it on their own and sort of grow at a reasonable rate to kind of add employees based on the revenue that they're generating.
If you bring in the VC money, you've lost control of your baby.
You have, and you've lost some control, and you maybe are growing at a speed that your business really can't really handle. So, one thing that we kind of did with this series and with bootstrapping, really, actually, we wrote the story across all of our 12 NL markets, kind of looking at the bootstrappers in all of our cities, because they too sometimes get overlooked within tech media. So it was really an opportunity to kind of double down and see what's happening at the bootstrap level.
So what did you find in Chicago?
We found that there are, you know, people who are bootstrappers, they're really, and I mean this in a positive way, really stubborn about yeah. it. They're really stubbornly bootstrapped. And it's really more than just we can't get funding, but it's a mindset around I want to have ownership of my business. I want to be able to grow at the pace that is going to be good for the employees at my business. And, you know, there's a lot of companies, sort of Groupon famously, right, that grew really, 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 really fast
right.
and has had to kind of obviously pull back. So I think a lot of companies are trying to sort of avoid maybe some of the pitfalls that other VC-backed businesses have made.
RxBar, that was a bootstrap company?
RxBar, yeah, sold for $600 million a couple years ago. Yeah, bootstrap business, built in the basement, said no to outside funding and had a really successful exit to Kellogg. So there are lots of examples. Basecamp is one of them in Chicago, a business that's, you know, stubbornly bootstrapped and is kind of just grown at the pace that they really believe is the best for their business and for their employees.
If you had a business, what would be your preference?
Man, it would really depend on what it is. You know, if you have a business idea that needs to spend a lot to, you know, kind of acquire market share, right? So in a story that I wrote for our Wisconsin site, you know, an example of that was Bright Cellars, which is like an online wine delivery business. That's a business that's really hard to not raise VC in because you have to spend a lot to acquire customers on the front end. So if I was doing a wine delivery business, like, yeah, I probably would take a fair amount of venture capital because I need to make sure I'm spending on Facebook ads and Google ads and acquiring the number of customers who are going to stick around for the long term.
All right, I'll try not to be sexist here on this next topic because your nails look fantastic. mine don't so much, but there's this new company, Ezza Nails. And they're talking about I've lost the word for it, but like a socially responsible way to get your nails done?
Yeah. So Ezza Nails, a Chicago startup, they have really created a nail salon, but in a way they've kind of flipped the model a little bit. They kind of call themselves the Soul Cycle of Nail Salon. So basically kind of a membership model like Soul Cycle is for fitness. They've kind of created this for nails. And, you know, the New York Times, I think in 2015, really had this just bombshell report on the nail care industry
right,
and just like how terrible a lot of the workers are treated and just kind of the messiness of the industry. So they kind of look at this industry as an opportunity for, you know, well-paid employees, you know, really improving the quality on both sides of the manicure table. And they just raised $1.5 million last week.
See, and that's how we measure them, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what
I know,
we're talking about. Yeah. So do they have is it a shop or?
So they have a salon in Streeterville and they're planning to open a second location next month.
And they're all online too, right? Where you can order your color in advance and all of that.
Exactly. Yeah. Really kind of bringing the internet to the nail salon industry.
Hey, what happened with Coinbase? There was big fanfare when they were coming here and expanding, and now they're sort of whimpering out of town.
Yeah, a year ago they had plans to open a Chicago office and hire about 100 people, mostly engineers, which is going to be a massive boon for the cryptocurrency industry right. in Chicago. They are shutting that office down completely, keeping it just a couple of folks. But yeah, really kind of a knock to their growth in Chicago and to kind of the cryptocurrency industry in the city in
All
general.
Right, keep an eye on that. Jim Dahlke, thanks for coming by. Read more at ChicagoInno.com. And there's the Inno Minute every morning on the opening bell at 5:25 with Stephen Grzanich's show. You do it, right? You host
it. That's right,
it.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part of the morning.
All right.
Thanks very much, Don Klepp and Steve Bertrand here from the Allstate Skyline Studio. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank on 720 WGN. All right, you wouldn't know it from the snow on Saturday or the cold driving rain today, but summer vacation time is coming up. It's not too far away. There's a study, some numbers out of creditcard.com about how 39 million of us won't be taking a summer vacation, and a lot of us won't even be taking all of vacation time anyway. On a phone line is a credit card analyst, Ted Rossman, who's joined us before. Ted, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, good to be here.
All right, I want you to explain for me, and I want you to take all the time you need, how it could be that 38% of us who get paid time off say we will not take all our vacation time this year.
Yeah, I think that is a really troubling statistic, that so many people are leaving so much time unused. That's my number one tip, is make sure that you get some time away this summer. I totally understand that everybody's on a budget and there's lots of pressures at work and home, and you know, there's lots of reasons to not go on vacation, but let's face it, you're going to be a way better employee, a way better family member if you take the opportunity to rest and recharge.
35% of us think that we won't use more than half of our vacation time. You know, and really, Ted, it's not even about going to the Ozarks or something. It's just about sitting at home or taking a benefit that you've earned. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. And just to give a little more context, so 52% of Americans are definitely planning summer vacations, 26% are definitely not, and 22% aren't sure yet. And I think especially for this last group, I would suggest perhaps a credit card sign-up bonus could get you that free trip. Now, we have to be careful. We definitely don't want you to overspend.
Right.
Credit card rates are high. The average is 18%. This strategy only works if you pay your bills in full. But if you do, get a card like the Chase Sapphire Preferred or the Capital One Saver. Those cards will give you $750 or $500, respectively, so, as a sign-up bonus.
Right. So the idea is let's not mortgage your future to take a vacation this summer. That's not the point of it. But there are some strategies that maybe you could use to get a leg up and get a little boost toward gaining the money you need for a vacation. Tell me about how these cards work. Like the Sapphire card, I know, is very encouraging when it comes to travel spending.
Right. The Sapphire Preferred is related to the Sapphire Reserve, which might be the one you're thinking of. The Sapphire Reserve is a really premium $450 annual fee card, although it's really $150 because they have a $300 travel credit that just comes off the top. That's the one that'll get you into the airport lounge, get you free global entry or TSA pre-check. One of the reasons I recommend the Sapphire Preferred is that it's a little bit more of a starter card. The annual fee is $95. The perks aren't quite as great, so definitely consider the Sapphire Reserve if you are interested. Meanwhile, the Capital One Saver, the other one I mentioned, is more of a cash back card, 4% back on dining and entertainment, which really makes it travel and summer entertainment friendly. That one, you have to spend $3,000 in the first 3 months to get the bonus.
Right.
But they waive the annual fee the first year. So these are a couple examples, but the bottom line is, whether it's through budgeting or whether it's through the right credit card or even just an old-fashioned staycation, make sure you can do something fun this summer.
What is a typical annual fee for a credit card? Is there a typical fee?
Most cards actually don't charge an annual fee, which I think is surprising to a lot of people, because we hear about all these premium cards with the fees, but it's only about 1 in 4 cards charges an annual fee. And then when they do, $95 is the most common. It does go up to $450 on the Sapphire Reserve, or in some cases even higher, like $550 on the Amex Platinum. These are more geared towards people who travel a whole lot. So most people are either paying zero or maybe $95 for a card.
Okay, so that's one strategy. You can find a credit card that's going to give you a little boost to help you with some travel dollars. The other is most people say they're not taking vacation because of their day-to-day bills. I would imagine that's credit card bills as well. And so you write about a balance transfer card, and I'm not sure I completely understand how that works. Can you explain a balance transfer card for me?
Sure. A balance transfer card is when you open a new credit card and you're going to take an existing credit card balance that you're probably paying a hefty rate on. The national average is about 18%, but many people are paying well into the 20s. So you're going to take that high rate card, move it onto this new balance transfer account, and they'll typically give you 0% interest for a period of time. It ranges usually 12 to 21 months. And it's really a great thing. There's often a transfer fee up front, 3 to 5% of the amount being transferred. It's part of how the card company makes their money off of this. There's a few cards that don't even charge that, though. Three I really like that offer 15 months, no interest, no transfer fee, are the Bank AmeriCard, the Chase Slate, and the Amex Everyday. It's really a tremendous tailwind to help you get out of debt.
All right, that's good to know. So a transfer credit card, a balance transfer, if that's a possibility. Hey, I want to go back to travel. There were some numbers in your report, and it said, you know, that older millennials tend to spend more on vacation than younger millennials. I get that. But then it broke down by geography, too. Westerners expect to spend, I think, what was it, $2,265 on a summer vacation, whereas if you're from the Midwest, you're only going to spend $1,600. Why is it that Westerners are spending more than us in the Midwest? I mean, seems to me like they live around the vacation spots. I got to travel to the West.
It could be. My theory, though, puts a little different spin on that, which is I think those of you in the Midwest are fortunate because you're closer to things. Like, for instance, for a Westerner to go to New York or Washington or Boston, that's a long flight.
True.
And for them to get to Europe is a really long flight. So I was thinking of it more from the angle that not only are there a lot of good things to do in the Midwest, but you're also not that far from either coast. I think that might be what's helping to keep your costs down.
That's a good point. So we can get there from here. We might not want to stay here, but we can get there from here.
And whatever you do this summer, go somewhere, whether it's a car trip or a staycation or if you can afford a plane trip. That's the main thing. I just think it's unbelievable how many people are leaving all this vacation time on the table. And besides not being able to afford it, people also cited they're too busy at work or they're too busy with their family or, you know, they're getting older and their health isn't as good. These are all very real pressures, but there's something you can do to break the routine. You don't have to go super far or spend a ton of money. So figure out something that works for you, but try to get out of the office this summer.
I mean, the fact is, too, workers have more leverage now than they've had in probably any time in my lifetime. I mean, you might not have an opportunity to take a vacation a few years from now. You better take advantage of it these days.
And that comes into play also with unused time that sometimes people tell me that, oh, I'm holding on to it, and when I leave this job, I'm going to get a big payout. Inevitably, what happens is when you get that payout, you think, oh, gosh, I really should have used the time
right.
instead. Because that's something that none of us have enough time with our family, our friends, our hobbies. It really doesn't make sense to bank an excessive amount of vacation time.
Ted Rossman is a credit card analyst at Bankrate.com. Ted, great to talk to you again.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Chicago has some pretty incredible buildings, and one of the newest is the Vista Tower along the river. What's significant about it, though, is that it jumps on the list of the tallest buildings in the city, coming up third with 101 stories. They've reached that final height this weekend, but they still have plenty of work to do. The newest addition to the Chicago skyline will have luxury condos, a hotel, and more. But we're still about a year out from it being finished. It's scheduled to be done early 2020. But what is finished is the strike with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Woohoo! Let's go! Yeah, all right! Mayor Emanuel helped mediate and negotiate this dispute over salary, and it's a good one. They settled on a 5-year contract with a 13.25% wage increase over the span of that time. It seemed like a successful way to walk away for the musicians and the CSO.
Well, I say, that's splendid news! Honey, get your mink coat! We're going to the orchestra!
I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. On the phone line now is Elise Glink, of course, the person behind Best Money Moves. And I'm looking at a piece from Best Money Moves today that I want to talk to her about. Elise, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
There's a piece up on your website about technology and people being isolated because there's so much technology, right? We spend all our day looking at a screen and not at each other. I kind of thought, I mean, wasn't there a movement a few years ago where people were giving up email for a day or for a week in the workplace, things like that?
I have seen all kinds of stories about people who are going on detox with technology, and I kind of wonder how these people are making a living. If somebody is sponsoring them, they have some sort of sugar parent who's who says, yes, sweetheart, you just get rid of your phone for a while and all will be well, because I would love one of those people.
Well, the story cites a study by Future Workplace and Virgin Pulse that says employees spend half the workday on email, and as a consequence, 40% of them feel lonely. I don't know if people who spend their time on email feel lonely, but I do think we're losing sort of an association or a feeling of community within the workplace sometimes.
Well, we are, and this is a big concern for employers who are worried about employee engagement, particularly with millennials and Gen Z employees who are very used to being engaged all the time, rewarded, and they like to
Attaboy,
have community
good
around
job.
Them.
Good job. You're doing a good job.
And here's a badge for you. Without sounding condescending, if you look in the workplace, that is an increasing challenge, and technology does have a big part of that. The other side of the flex, you know, you've got work from home flexibility, and everybody wants that. But when you're working on your own, again, you get that kind of isolation, and a little too much working from home can actually not be so good for team mentalities. And so there's a real fine balance that employers are looking for. And I think it changes from sort of workforce to workforce.
Well, and so, right, and working from home then is the next logical step for this, because more and more of us are doing that. Our ability, because of technology, to work virtually anywhere is greatly expanding, it seems like, week to week. So there's got to be a way for employers to encourage employee buy-in without necessarily talk around the water cooler.
Right. I think that one of the things that you want to do is create the sense of community electronically. So a lot of companies use Google Hangouts, or they use other kinds of technology where people are constantly talking to each other. From a company point of view, one of the most successful things that I'm seeing out there in terms of culture is people who are finding ways to engage employees that takes them offline for a while. So some meetings are good. Off-sites are becoming increasingly important. More and more conferences are springing up, and a lot of employees go to conferences several times a year where they mingle with colleagues. They generate that kind of feel-good idea, and then they come back, and then they do sharing with the group back in the office. And so there's different ways like that to intersperse this kind of person-to-person connection, along with all the technology that office workers need every day.
Because the water cooler talk is good, right? I mean, gossip isn't so good, but having connections with people, having conversations in the hallway, that sort of creates a cohesiveness. If you know what your coworker's kid's doing in his baseball league or things like that, that brings everyone together and helps form the spirit of a workplace.
It does, and just sort of randomly bumping into each other in an office is important. If you think about it's not so new anymore, but when Apple built its campus a few years ago, that huge oval spaceship-like thing that looks like it landed in Silicon Valley, it was specifically designed so that there was an oval walkway around each of the floors, so that basically you would be walking and literally bump into people, or you'd be able to go for a walk around the circle with a colleague to be able to discuss something, have walking meetings. You know, nobody can ever find an empty conference room anyway. So these are the kinds of things that I think office designers are thinking about in terms of next generation fostering those connections and that spark of creativity that's so important.
And one of the reasons you want workers to feel as if they belong or are an essential cog is because you want to keep the workers. I mean, we are in... You know, it's a generational shift, it seems to me. Like, you know, when I was a young worker, I was looking to my employer to not fire me. Now the employers, right? And now the employers are looking to the employees to not quit on them.
Well, when we started our jobs, the unemployment rate wasn't at 3.8%, which it is now. It is so expensive to hire new people. It's roughly about 150% of salary to hire a new worker. And so employers are desperate to keep the ones they have. They're already trained. They know what they're doing. They know how to get to the office. And so what they're trying to do is create workplaces where people want to work. They want to be there. They want to come in and engage with other people. And building that company culture, it is such an important thing that on our website, it's all of our company culture articles are like the top performing articles, blogs that we have, because people are so desperate to get any kind of insider tips on what makes a successful workplace.
Well, I enjoyed this one. It was at bestmoneymoves.com. Elise Glink, thanks very much for joining us today.
You bet, Steve. See you soon.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.